My name is Phil Moore. I'm the Youth and Short-Term Programs Manager for London City Mission, which is a fairly grandiose title, and it suggests an enormous amount, but actually I need people like Paul and Sheila to come and work with me and keep me sane and give me some credibility when I come to places like this. That's why I let them go first. So this is all the work that we're doing, and I can sit back and go, woo, hey, that's what I'm trying to oversee and check. Making the decision on Paul and Sheila to keep them on was a cinch. Yeah, if you guys have come and met them, spent time with them, I've known them for 8 years from when Laura, their daughter, was first coming up to join us as a 16-year-old on a summer team. I remember speaking at the baptism of Andrew. Some of you remember at Coombe Street. I even remember this morning what I was preaching on. Don't worry, I'm not preaching on the same subject this morning. And so it's been a privilege to know them, and in the last 18 months or so to work with them as colleagues, to see their heart for young people, and to know that they're coming from a church that are partnering with them. It's such a great encouragement to know that you guys here, you know, some of you may not even know them, but it's a great encouragement that this church is supporting them. I know you give regularly. I know you pray regularly. And I want to thank you, and I want to honour you on behalf of London City Mission for making that partnership with them. Because without you, without your prayers and without that support, they would not be able to keep up the ministry that they are doing at the moment. Sheila is mum to everybody, and because of the partnership they are, that Paul is able to bring the wisdom and to explain that Sheila doesn't necessarily want to be their real mum, it's in their heart. They are people that are there to want to serve. And once these guys on the team get around the fact that Sheila is like a mother hen that gathers them round and says, for this year, you're going to be my family. And that's a philosophy that I endorse as well, and say, for this year, the City Vision team is a family. And I need people that can make that work. And Paul and Sheila do that superbly well. And so I want to say thank you to you. I'd also just before I start to speak, you can turn to 2 Timothy chapter 4. And while you're doing that, I just wanted to introduce somebody else, because it's very easy for you to sit there and say, well, London City Mission, it's a long way away. It's about 2.5-hour drive on a good day. And we see this guy come down here. I've been coming down for several years now. He talks a funny way. He doesn't talk like what you do. Yeah. I talk the Queen's English. I talk proper. If you've met my wife, you know that after 23 years of marriage, she's still working on trying to correct my English and make sure that I don't drop so many T's and H's and things like that. But I want to bring London City Mission a little bit closer to home for you. You've got Paul and Sheila that come from here, but also Lawrence, who's here with Amy. Can I ask them just to come forward? Lawrence is the shy and retiring one in the couple. And just to take a moment for them to say who they are, where they're from, because they're a little bit closer to home for you guys.
Good morning. I've got to stand forward. There's something special about this piece of floor here. I'm Lawrence. This is my wife, Amy. We've been married for just over 6 months. Got to get that bit right. Amy is a West London girl through and through, who I met a couple of years ago. I have a bit of a history with the church here in Chard. I've known Wayne since I was about 14, 15 years old, and it's the Lampy family, through the Cheddar Camp, Christian camps. What was his name? Mike Strange, who ran them years ago. And I used to go to a community church, Martock Christian Fellowship. Started a teenage youth work there many years ago. This was back in the time when we used to have, I don't know what you call them, youth services, praise services down in Coombe Street before you moved here. So long way back. I was born in Yeovil. I don't have the West Country twang. I can do it if you want. But I was also involved in local estate agency, C. Palmer Snell in Chard. I managed the branch of Palmer Snell in Martock for 3 years before the Lord laid a hand on his life and called me out of the work. And I ended up in London, of all places, which I didn't expect to be in, didn't really want to go to either, but the Lord lays the conviction on your heart and moves you. I just wanted to share a very quick verse. I work in Chiswick in a Baptist church up there in a very wealthy part of West London. Average house price, about £700,000. Most of the families there live in and in Chiswick, but commute into the city, very wealthy. And perhaps not as ethnically diverse as some of the East End places that we've heard about this morning. The lady who chaired the service this morning said that in comparison, her life in Chard seemed perhaps, well, a bit different, irrelevant. The verse which came to me this morning is this in Ezekiel. Son of man, can these bones live? He said to me, prophesy to these bones and say to them, dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says to these bones. I will make breath enter you, and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you and make flesh come upon you and cover you with skin. I will put breath in you. You will come to life. Then you will know that I am the Lord. Now, I don't know what you think about when you look at Chard or your villages you live in, the towns you live in. But you know what? When I go to Chiswick, I'm overwhelmed by trendy Londoners, intellectual people. I didn't go to uni. I knock on doors. I don't know who's going to be behind that door, whether they're Muslim, whether they're atheists, whether they're Hindus, whether they're just regular people. I even met one woman behind the door. She said, yeah, I believe in the oldest religion in the world, Zoroastrianism. And I just looked blankly at her and thought, what on earth is that? But you know, there's one thing we have to believe as Christians, that it is the word of God alone that brings life on dead bones. He created the world as we know it, and he recreates people into new life. And that's the confidence I have as a London City missionary.
So another local link, and do chat to Lawrence and Amy afterwards. You can get a word in edgeways with Amy. And, but that's the sign of a good London City missionary. You've got to butt in and get in there. We like to talk. We're going to turn to 2 Timothy chapter 4. Stephen's just going to read some of those verses for us. So if you've got your Bibles, please turn to 2 Timothy 4.
Okay, 2 Timothy 4. In the presence of God and of Christ Jesus, who will judge the living and the dead, and in view of his appearing and his kingdom, I give you this charge. Preach the word. Be prepared in season and out of season. Correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and careful instruction. For the time will come when men will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear. They will turn their ears away from the truth and turn aside to myths. But you, keep your head in all situations, endure hardship, do the work of an evangelist, discharge all the duties of your ministry. For I am already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time has come for my departure. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, would award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing.
I want you to take a very brief moment and turn to the person next to you. This is where various gasps go, what's he going to say? What's he going to make me do? Do I really know the person sitting next to me? Well, here's your opportunity to find out who it is sitting next to you. I want you to share one thing. I want you to imagine that you have only got one thing that you can say to that person. What would it be? There's only one thing that you can say. Maybe one sentence. What would you want them to know in that moment? That's all you've got. So I'm going to give you a few seconds to think about it. If you had one thing that you could say, what would that one thing be that would be so important beyond anything else. And please don't come out with Chelsea are the best football team in the world. You know, we'll take that as read. One thing. That wasn't a joke. One thing that you would want to say to them that you think is so important that they hear that beyond anything else, what would it be? Just ask you, just take a few moments. Turn to the person next to you. Share it very, very briefly. Don't talk for too long because I'm going to stop you very quickly. Go. Okay, if you've had your go, let the other person have a go. Run out of things to say. Well done. See, I'm really encouraged by Paul. This book, 2 Timothy, is Paul's last statement, his last comment to his beloved mentoree, Timothy. And there's things that he wants to say. But like a good London City missionary, he can't content himself with one thing. He rolls off this great long list of things. Oh, and by the way, Timothy, can you tell so-and-so this? Can you say this? Could you do that? Could you bring this? Could you say this? Could you do this? Could you say that? But the message that runs right through this book is, are you willing to work? Are you willing to understand the word? Are you willing to work that word in season and out of season? And are you willing to preach it when it is good for you and when it is bad for you, when it encourages you, when it discourages you? Are you prepared? And the first five verses are full of this, Timothy, come on, mate. And then he goes on to say, look, I am preparing to depart. There is no more that I can say. This is probably Paul's last letter. He may be sitting in an open prison writing this as a final letter out. And he's saying, I'm on my way out. I'm handing over the baton to you. This is what I need you to do. Preach the word. And it's a fight. It's a struggle. And it is not over, as they say, until the fat lady sings. I haven't heard the fat lady sing yet. And Paul is saying, listen, just because my time is going and I'm fading, it doesn't mean that we stop the message. Paul has preached so that there is an opportunity for Timothy to preach. Timothy needs to preach so that further generations will continue to preach, so that we have the opportunity to preach today. The message is still the same. Preach the word. And some of you sit there, well, you know, you say, I'm not really an upfront kind of person. I had someone come to join London City Mission and said, will London City Mission take me because I am not an upfront person? But that person's gifts for coming alongside people, sharing with them, serving other people were so fantastic. I said, there is no way that LCM are not going to take you onto this team. Just because you're not up front, there are different roles for us to play. And when it comes to preaching the word, we need to understand that there are different roles for us. For some of us, you can see me better now, there is a general call. There is a general call for us to preach the word. Those of us that know and love the Lord are encouraged to go and share that at the level that we know. And then there is the specific calling. Paul is saying to Timothy, there's a specific calling for you. You need to pick up the mantle as a leader. You need to be the upfront person that is encouraging, that is enthusing, that is coaching, that is mentoring. You need to be taking that on. And that is specific calling. And for some of us, we are called into that situation. But for all of us, there is this general calling of preach the word, share your faith, in season, out of season, when you feel like it, when you don't feel like it, when you feel knocked down. Preaching the word is not a Ricky Hatton fight that lasts two rounds. You get back up. You're never knocked out. And when we move on and we start to sing the songs of praise in heaven, there will be others, hopefully, that have been encouraged by us to keep going and keep sharing and keep preaching. There's a breakdown of the chapter. You'll be relieved to know that I'm not going to go through all of those verses. We need to accept the charge to preach. Why? Someone told me the other day that half the people who have ever lived, you can challenge this stat, I didn't make it up. Half the people who have ever lived are alive today and most of them don't know Jesus. Is that a good enough reason to start sharing Jesus with other people? Half the people who have ever lived are alive today and most of them don't know Jesus. God is coming back. Do you believe that? Three or four nods. Yeah. Okay, it's gradually filtering across. There is a wave that's moving across this place. It's finally hit Lawrence. Yeah. Gary, it will get to you. Don't worry, mate. God is coming back and he needs to find people who are ready, that are willing to preach now, that are still willing to preach tomorrow. And when we find ourselves facing the end, we are still preaching. Does that cover all ages? Am I not just relating to the children? The children are not here. It's for all ages, yeah? I like some audience participation. So yeah, keep nodding at me. Keep smiling. I know you're still there. But what does it need? It needs patience. I mentioned that Paul is so patient. I learned patience from watching Paul. And you might say, well, he may say, I'm not that patient, but I watch him and the way he talks with people and shares with people, there is great patience. For me, it's just like, come on, do this now, go! I need people alongside me that say, Phil, you know, sometimes you need to learn a little bit of patience. And it's not just patience, it is great patience. How many of you have got great patience? I just put my hand up as an example. How many of you would like to have your marriage partner to have greater patience? We need patience. And we need to be careful with the word, how we use it. Sometimes we go in really heavy with people. One of the things I've learned is don't give it out if you can't take it. People will challenge us. How do you respond to that? One or two of the team here will know a little story that I'm telling just recently. I was on a training course. I do training in physical restraint. So don't mess with me. I'll restrain you and throw you out. The trainer, he'd known me. I was back on a refresher course. He knew me. He knows that I'm a Christian. He knows something of what I do. He said to me, Phil, I have a question for you. Come on, I'm going to challenge you now. What is the 11th commandment? And I thought, you are winding me up. I'm here to do a course. I need to get that certificate so I can carry on doing the training for London City Mission. Stop winding me up with these irrelevant questions. There is no 11th commandment. He said, yes, there is. I have a message from God. I thought, now you're really winding me up. I know you're not a Christian. So what is this about? He said, there is an 11th commandment. God has told me the 11th commandment. I need you to tell me or you won't pass. Oh, that's a bit unfair. Said, there is no 11th commandment. This went on for a couple of days. By the second day, I thought, I'm not having this. So I said to him, okay, you tell me that you've been seen God, got an 11th commandment. I need to know, have you been up the mountain? He said, what are you talking about? I said, if you've got an 11th commandment, if you've got a commandment, you must have been up the mountain, because the only people who get commandments from God have to go up a mountain, meet with him, and when they come down, do you know what? They have to wear something. He said, what's that? I said, it's a veil. Put a veil on. He went, that is not in the Bible. I said, yes, it is. I'll go and get it and I'll show you. He went, really? Yeah, it's in the Bible. He went, I need to understand that. I need to see that. He called over another work, one of his guys that he was training. He said, we need to read a bit more of the Bible. I'm just standing there. I'm going, really? Okay, you tell him. I don't need to. This guy went, oh, yeah, okay, Mark, I'll read the Bible. Don't get put off. But who do you correct and who do you allow to correct you? Isn't it humbling when someone that you don't think should correct you comes and corrects you? And they do it more lovingly than you think you would ever do it to somebody else. That's really humbling, isn't it? When was the last time you allowed someone to correct you and you took it? When was the last time you sat there and just went, go and sort out the plank in your own eye before you come and deal with my speck? That's what we tend to do, isn't it? There's a challenge to encourage, give responsibility, stay cool. Is it worth it to keep encouraging people, to keep challenging people, to stay cool when you want to yell at people, if only you knew? But when we see Jesus, we'll discover it was worth it. Comments drawn from the many comments that Paul wants to make as he closes this book out. He wants to ensure that young leaders have an assurance about their faith, that it is real, especially those that have struggled. And if you look in there, who is the one person that he says to Timothy, bring this person, I need to see them? Mark, the guy that let him down, the guy that he was cross with, the guy that he didn't allow to come onto a mission team with him, and it caused a rift between him and Barnabas. And he says, bring Mark back. There's something important that I need to do. I need to reassure him and tell him that God has a plan for his ministry and he needs to move on with it. Are we investing in people even when they've let us down, when they've made some mistakes? Do we go back and encourage them to keep going and keep preaching the word? And we need to protect senior leaders. Sometimes we leave the senior leaders alone because we just say, they're doing all right. Look at Andrew here. He's a spiritual giant. He seems to have it all. He's a great preacher. He's a great pastor. Is there anything else you told me to say? And sometimes we can stand back and not honor him and not pray for him because we feel he's there. And what does Paul say here? He says, I need a coat. I need you to help me. Timothy, the young guy, is coming and saying, look, Paul, I'm going to bring you your coat because I know you're starting to get a little bit cold. And I want to encourage you and keep you warm so that you can keep uttering these words of inspiration to me. He's going to bring him the things that he knows he wants around him to help him feel comfortable and minister in those last moments that he has. And so he brings his coat, he brings the scrolls, which are possibly some of the gospel letters and some other important documents. Encourage the younger ones, support the senior ones. Why do we need to encourage people? Because one of the things that I've found is that people sometimes don't do things just because they believe that God can use them. Sometimes they need Christian leaders around them that tell them that they can do it. And they do things not because they think that God can use them, but because they find another Christian leader who believes in them and encourages them. Who did that for you? Who are the Christian leaders that encouraged you in your walk of faith to preach the word and share your faith? Sometimes people will fulfill the charge, not because they feel they can, but because you believe they can. And wise leadership needs to push people in the right direction. And in his closing statements, this is what Paul is wanting to do. And saying to Timothy and to others, the strength and the courage will come and it will become apparent when you step out in faith. That's the thing he can't give him. He can't give him faith to step out. He can only encourage him to do it. Give people a reason to carry on. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had an outreach at our headquarters as the marathon came up one road and turned and ran over Tower Bridge. And people are cheering and shouting them to keep going so they make it to the end. Some of you will have seen the news programs of the army guy that has walked it. And it took him weeks. I think he's just finished, hasn't he? We need to be encouraging people to carry on. What encourages you to carry on? Who are you encouraging to carry on? I'd just like you to take a moment to think about one person that you can encourage, irrespective of age, that you can encourage to grow in their faith and be a support to other people, whether they're going on a mission field, whether they're here and they need to be witnessing in their college or their workplace, one person. And just take a moment before we sing our final song to pray for that person. Do that now. Musicians are going to come and lead us in our final song. Let's just sing it as a prayer. Paul's encouragement to Timothy is there in the fourth line. Fan the living flame. In the earlier chapters, in chapter 1, Paul is saying to Timothy, fan into flame all that you know, all that you have, all the resourcing, all the training that you have. Fan that into flame, that people would see a fire and a passion that burns in you, and that you go out and share that so that it's caught.